This morning, Hawaii talks about Mauna Kea, which has become a flashpoint in communities across the state. It has sparked conversation across the country as politicians and high-profile entertainers and musicians use their celebrity to draw attention to the drama on the mountain. Joining us by phone today for our call-in show, John Osorio, Dean of Hawaii Nui Akea School of Hawaiian Knowledge. He grew up in Hilo with no escaping the presence of the mountain, and he was there at the start of this latest TMT showdown. John DeFreese was born and raised in Waikiki. He's lived in Kona for the last 30 years. DeFreese is the president of the Native Son Business Group, a business consulting and project management firm. He does not represent any of the Mauna Kea observatories or the University of Hawaii and offers a different view of what might be possible. And joining us in studio, Kealoha Fox. She's the new Native Hawaiian Cultural Liaison at Aloha Care, a nonprofit health care plan in Hawaii. She oversees organizational initiatives serving Native Hawaiians across all islands. In 2018, the World Health Summit recognized her as one of 10 new voices in global health. She's here to talk about the process of healing of Ho'oponopono. Welcome to you all. We're talking about Mauna Kea and the 30-meter telescope, and we are hearing from Native voices offering different views of the past and hopes for the future. John Osorio, can we start with you? Folks look to you as a leader in the Hawaiian community. How do you see this impasse that we're at?
Well, I see it as a historian and as a participant in this conflict. And I've participated as a board member for Kaheo since 2009, I think. It goes back that far, at least for this particular telescope. I'm also from Hilo, and I left there about the time they began the building of those very small telescopes the University of Hawaii put up in the late 1960s. But historically, we have a problem and a conflict here because essentially the creation of that complex of telescopes was done despite increasing resistance and opposition over time, and opposition that the telescope community, the astronomical community, the university communities, the business communities on Hawaii Island basically didn't think that they had to be stalled or stopped by that opposition. And so part of what we're seeing today is really the result of a process that was deeply flawed. And in fact, we're not the first people to find fault with the process. There was the audit in 1995, and the recognition in 2005 by NASA that there had been serious adverse consequences to the building of these telescopes. When you put all of those things together, it's not surprising that there is so much concentrated opposition to the building of the 30-meter telescope today.
Do you see it as just, people are saying enough already?
Yeah, I think they're saying, we were saying enough before the 30-meter telescope. This one is really a kind of, it's way past the time of compromise. For many people, this is the insistence on going through with a project that a growing number of people oppose. It seems to really shout out what is most wrong with the process of decision making when it comes to land and natural resources in Hawaii in the 21st century.
And John DeFreese, you're there in Kona. How are you viewing this?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how are you looking at Mauna Kea and where we're at today?
Let me say that I believe that Mauna Kea has the power to convene exactly what is happening on the Mauna right now, and in fact embraces that activity. I also believe that Mauna Kea embraces modern astronomy, and the construction of TMT. And as Native Hawaiians, we come from different traditions and different houses of knowledge. And those houses are very diverse. And let me first say that there are kupuna leaders on the Mauna right now whom I love and respect and think of as mentors. And in large part, the positions I take have been shaped by teachings and conversations I've had with them over the years. I think when I think of the various houses of knowledge we come from as families, one of the common elements that is priority to all the houses is the element of time and the precision of time and the precision of protocols and rituals. Precision of human activity. And there is a process, flawed as John Osorio described, that I felt was validated by the participation of the Kia'i leaders, who themselves impressed me as people of integrity. Their willingness to push this all the way to the Supreme Court. In fact, affirmed the integrity of the process, albeit it is flawed. And that process resulted in TMT receiving the necessary approvals to begin construction. And we have arrived at the point in time in this standoff. But I actually believe that the standoff is a critical nexus of a turning point that we have reached as a state. Our ancestors would refer to this as Hulial, turning point of transformation, and this dynamism, in fact, between the conflicting forces is needed, A, as a wake-up call to the general public, and B, to start a transformation across the board politically in our education system, in our economic model. And look forward to the questions and further conversations. Thank you.
All right. And Ke Aloha, you know, I know over the last month we've been doing lots of stories. And the one thing, the takeaway for me is I hear a lot of hurt out there. You're in a field of healing. You know, how are you looking at this?
Vilina mai me ke aloha kako. You know, as a scientist, a millennial, you know, a cultural practitioner, I don't see Mauna Kea as an example of culture versus science. If you have ever seen the power of cultural ike, those of my kumu, my mentors, you would see that culture is science and ancient wisdom is the highest form of intellect. This is where our health, our mauliola, is derived from as Native Hawaiians. And I see Kukia'i Mauna as a tremendous example of how the Native Hawaiian community is tackling difficult issues, issues that have been nested within ongoing discourse for multiple generations. I immediately think about social, environmental, and cultural justice that is needed now. It's been needed for quite some time and across multiple generations. We're not just thinking about the legal processes and documents anymore. We're really talking about systemic change. I think about my training in public health, and there is a tremendous amount of attention being paid to the built environment around the world, how man-made structures can impede or infringe on health quality, and how the creation of new physical environments must go through planning processes that demonstrate positive benefits to physical, mental, and emotional health of the community, especially those who reside in that immediate district. When I think about the continuance and the vitality of Native Hawaiian traditional and customary practices, those are lively at Mauna Kea. They have always been, and this is an exceptionally unique example where natural resources and a spiritual environment comes together for a healthy cultural identity of our people. And this is a great way that we can think about the larger health context of what does the future of the well-being of our people look like for generations to come.
And is there a place then for Ho'oponopono in all of this?
You know, as a practitioner of Ho'oponopono, I feel like that can only be agreed upon by the Kia'i and the Kupuna who have lived by those practices and protocols and who have been the consummate guardians and you know, since the 1970s, and those that are there now here in 2019. I think it's up to our last surviving haku, ho'oponopono, those highest ranking experts in our community, for them to decide if, when, why, and how ho'oponopono is an option for Mauna Kea, and the future interactions to have a spiritual process with decision makers and decision making bodies. You can't take the spiritual essence out of ho'oponopono. It's not just a talk story. It's not just a conversation for mediation. It is a spiritual process. It starts with pule, and so you have to start there. And it's really up to the haku ho'oponopono to decide, and it's really up to the kia'i and the kupuna to agree upon first and foremost.
Do you agree with that viewpoint, John? Both Johns, I guess.
You know, Ke Aloha is the expert here. My understanding of Ho'oponopono, you know, starts and begins with the notion that the participants actually want a resolution and will accept a kind of unknotting of the hihia that is sort of binding us all together in this conflict on the mountain. And, you know, I don't know that kind of understanding and grace actually can exist so long as there's, you know, this one side that says, just let us build one more, or, you know, let's build this, and as we do this, we can talk about how Hawaiian culture can be raised and acclaimed and given a place, and where the other side is basically saying, you've done so much to alter this landscape, you've done this, so many of these projects in opposition, against our opposition and resistance, you know, why should there be one more? There's a rational part of this, there's a rational way of looking at this that makes me wonder whether the kind of spiritual generosity that Ho'oponopono offers is possible in this case. And there is still that part of me that realizes as long as the kia'i want to remain on that road and blocking the progress of the of this building, then the only way for TMT to be built is by physically removing us, is by actually taking that step of physical confrontation and violence. And I really get that very few people want to go there. There are people, however, in Hawaii who would love to see this happen. I get that there is no appetite for this among state decision makers and among people in the astronomy community. And I know that we would not like to see it visited upon us. But really and truly, this pilikia is decades in the making and is not going to be unknotted by a few weeks of conversation and realization. So I would ask Ke Aloha, where would you, you know, you're saying basically that it's going to be up to the participants themselves. How do you even get people to the point where they can talk about having a conversation where one thing or another is going to happen? Either the telescope is going to be built or it won't be. How do you get to that point? In my opinion, if the TMT folks would simply withdraw and leave, then I think we could have a conversation about what happens on that mountain and how we can create a better process for making decisions about land use in spaces like Mauna Kea in the future. But as long as there is that desire and pressure to build this, where is the opportunity for real hope on the Pono?
John DeFries, your thoughts?
I actually agree with everything Keloha and John Osorio have said. In our family, Ho'oponopono begins with recognizing that all parties are out of balance. All parties. And then a recognition of how do we reconcile and move together to a place of balance. Early in this conversation, TMT has become a symbol of a perceived and real madness, an actual madness that must be stopped. But TMT is not the real target of the angst and the anxiety and the pain. It really has to do with a system that is homegrown, that is Kama'aina, that puts forth the rules and regulations by which people like TMP from the outside enter our space. And so our real point of frustration has less to do with TMT at the moment and more to do with a system that allowed TMT to secure its approvals. And I think that the moment that is upon us is being able to translate the energy on the Mauna right now into the kind of political muscle, spiritual centeredness, all the elements that are required to basically transform a system. So these kinds of things cannot happen. But TMT walked in, was handed a rule book, have followed the rules. When they didn't follow the rules, they were forced to go back and proceed through an administrative process and a judicial process. And so I think that we need to make a distinction between where our mana is directed. And I realize it's difficult to put TMT out of our minds, but TMT actually entered a system that we as a Kama'aina society created. And we're learning that it's a heavily flawed system that needs to be changed. So going back to your question about Ho'oponopono, I think it begins by all parties recognizing that we're all currently out of balance. And do we desire to achieve a balance?
Keloha, any other thoughts?
I would really encourage that this conversation should really happen with the Ho'oponopono Kupuna Council. I think they're the only ones with the highest ranking knowledge that has been passed down generation after generation to them as the living descendants of this highest form of cultural ike. That's for them and their kulana to decide as a group. And I wanted to go back to one thing that Kumujan had just said, because I think it's critically important. You cannot have Ho'oponopono if there continues to be infliction of injury and pain. And when we talk about spirituality and sacredness as being part of the essence of what our Oihana Moliola, our traditions of Hawaiian culture in health and medicine, looks like, if you are physically removing someone from a pu'u honua that is sacred and is kapu, that is inflicting injury and pain, not just on an individual, but on their family members, on community members, and in this case, an entire lahui. So I just wanted to go back to what Dean had said, because I think that's critically important. There cannot be a continued infliction of injury and pain on our people that continues to bring about more cultural trauma again and again. And so the applicability of Ho'oponopono relative to Mauna Kea, Pohakuloa, Makua Valley, Haleakala, and those major events that have caused and will continue to aggrieve Native Hawaiians and our sacred connection to these places and the mana that they possess, is we're really talking about a sacred space at this point. We're really talking about our Vawakua. We're talking about a different realm that if decision makers and decision making bodies are continuing to ignore and to push aside and literally forcibly remove, I think then we're really not at the stage yet to be talking about a process of Ho'oponopono.
You know, we have a caller on the line, a little shy, Tom from Lapahoehoe. He had a question for John DeFries. He asked, why are we at this point of conflict now? Why wasn't there a reexamination of how the mountain has been developed for astronomy purposes before this showdown?
Good question. You know, I personally did not participate in any aspect of the approval process and derived my confidence, growing confidence in the process by watching the intensity and vigor with which the Kia'i leaders as plaintiffs pursued this. And I don't have an answer as to why the process wasn't done. Perhaps we didn't have the political will or the cultural force that is being brought to bear. But this much I know, that if 8-9 years ago when this process started and the degree and intensity of the cultural force we are feeling on the Mauna today was brought to bear, TMT would have been erased 8 years ago.
Say that again, John. I'm sorry, I missed that. What would have been erased?
TMT.
Oh.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Our guests in our studio, John Osorio, Dean of Hawaii Nui Akea School of Hawaiian Knowledge, John DeFries, President of Native Sun Business Group, and Kealoha Fox, Native Hawaiian Cultural Liaison at Aloha Care. If you're just joining The Conversation, we're talking about Mauna Kea, and we'd like to know what you think. You can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. You know, we did talk to one of the protectors of the mountain earlier. Dean Saranulio is on the faculty at New York University. He flew to the Big Island to take part in the protest, and he shared his thoughts about what he saw play out on the mountain that first week.
I was able to be there when the kupuna were being arrested, and I was also there when the wahine, a few hundred women, after the kupuna were arrested, they stood up and they made a line. And then I was there in the kane line, the men's line, right behind them. And there when we started to hear that people had started to slow down traffic on H1 freeway and started to hear other things taking place at the Kahului Airport and Front Street in Lahaina, and hearing all of those different acts of solidarity with us blocking the access road, but also obviously mobilized by the kupuna who were arrested. So, and I wasn't able to stay there as long as I wished I could have, but I can say that I was there long enough to bear witness to just how highly organized the leaders were. I guess I don't know how to explain it, except just that, like, I've never really experienced so much kindness and generosity, and also people who are kind of united in purpose. I was there for a week, but I was there long enough, I think, to be able to see how special that movement is, how special the people who are organizing it is. I guess inspired is too small of a word, but I feel very much moved and transformed by the experience.
And John, you were there, and I believe your daughter was one of the ones who, I think, chained herself to the grate there at the mountain, and that was an emotional time for you.
Yeah, it was indeed, and that's why, I mean, even the way we're having this conversation today, and John's comments and Kealoha's insight on this, I think one of the things that we all see is the tremendous vitality of of the Kia'i, their incredible competence in not just, it's because this is not just an organization of a protest. This is really kind of the organization and the caring for a small town over now what is a month of existence. And they're doing this essentially by managing tremendous resources that are being donated. So this immense generosity that's being shared and run, and a very significant and important message that's being conveyed, because I've been there over and over again. But there's a message that's being conveyed over and over and over again, and that is, you know, no violence, no alcohol, no smoking. You know, we treat each other with kindness. We look after one another. We care for each other. The creation of that has already, this is my opinion, the creation of that has already really kind of, it outshines almost anything you can see out of a telescope. How long something like this can last is another question, and one that, you know, I think is something we should talk about. Where does this movement, John, where does it go if it is removed, right? If it's removed by the police, what do we lose? What do we lose if the telescope is built? And I know you could ask the question, what can we gain by this? But, you know, what we see on that mountain is thousands of people coming together over many, many weeks now. And we're speaking our language. We're sharing our stories. We're singing. We're dancing. We're learning these prayers. We're learning a discipline. We're learning a discipline of behavior that is good for us, and in that sense, you can almost say that one of the things that the telescope has produced that is really good has been this convocation of our people, of this Lahui. But what happens? What happens if, in order to build this telescope, you have to sweep aside the community?
John DeFries. John DeFries, what do you think about that?
I can barely. Catherine, can you speak up? I could just. I could hear John, but.
Well, what do you think about this? What do you think about what he had to say?
You know, he raises the relevant question, and I think. I want to go back a year when we were experiencing the kind of lava activity eruptions that were unprecedented, certainly in my lifetime, and the power of that statement. And while that was happening, astronomical discoveries were being identified, first of its kind, interstellar asteroids, given the name Oumuamua. By Larry Kimura, advanced messenger scout from Pole, whose flight is passing the orbit of Jupiter at the same time the eruptions start. Fast forward to April of this year, the first images of the black hole. 6 billion times the mass of the sun. When I look at these discoveries, in the morning, the painful morning, watching Kupuna arrested, I was at the Nanuloa getting ready to attend a workshop of Native Hawaiian language speakers who were entering a week-long workshop, part of which was focused on naming astronomical life forms and systems. And watching Kupuna, who are pivotal to our understanding, who are unbroken links to the knowledge that Kealoha is referring to, be taken away at the same time entering a planetarium and watching a description of a quasar 12.8 billion light years away. And so for me, when I look at that experience, and the personal experience I'm going through is this, knowing that Mauna Kea is the first child of Papa Earth Mother and Vakea Sky Father, is Earth Mother only the Aina on Hawaii, or is it the entire planet? These are personal questions, and I'm just putting forth my own interpretation. Earth Mother is the entire planet, and its soul, her ohana, is Native Hawaiian, and her ohana is all of humanity. When I think of Vakea as Sky Father, the masculine force, is it just the skies under which Hawaii rotates, or is it the vast universe that goes back 12.8, 13.8 billion light years or more? And again, these are personal questions, and so for me, modern astronomy is tantamount to understanding Vakea's ancestry by way of studying Vakea's genealogy. And all life forms and living systems in the universe are Ohana Vakea, the family of Vakea. And these instruments have the capability of making discoveries that will elevate human consciousness at a time when the planet needs it, because of the damage we're doing to indigenous peoples, indigenous cultures, to our environment. It is a time that our consciousness be transformed at scale globally. And that's what's being initiated at Mauna Kea by our own Lahui.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We are talking about Mauna Kea. You can join our discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hi, I'm Deborah Pompadour, owner of Evergreen by Deborah, and we are underwriters of Hawaii Public Radio. I feel that over the years, Hawaii Public Radio has become an indispensable part of our lives. And when our business grew to a point where we could afford to become an underwriter, we felt it was important to expand our community support of HPR.
Hawaii Public Radio Underwriting. Your message heard here. Learn more at hawaiipublicradio.org.
We are back with The Conversation. And Kealoha Fox, you had wanted to add something to this conversation that we were having.
I think even the ability to have a conversation and the format of it would really benefit for us continuing in the Native Hawaiian community. So all three of us on The Conversation today identify as Native Hawaiians. And so how are we having face-to-face conversations through mediums that make sense to us in this case? How can we have spaces that are protected and safe for us to kuka, just like this? So I appreciate that the space has been opened up, and I hope that face-to-face conversations can happen, because I think that's really the more appropriate medium. But I wanted to go back to just a point about how Kapu Aloha is really permeating the peaceful protection of Mauna Kea lands, resources, and sites that are unparalleled in their ecological, cultural, and spiritual significance, right? So when I think about how Hawaiian values and how our standards are relative to our worldview, what does health mean to us, and this overarching picture of well-being, I think it's really a phenomenal time to point to examples like Kapu Aloha, exactly everything that Dean had just listed, of how there's no tobacco use, there's no alcohol use, there are places for keiki, there are places for students who are learning, there is piko three times a day. This is a phenomenal time for our people where we're reactivating these practices, where many Kanaka are revitalizing Maoliola in their homes and communities. And that's really the epicenter of where Ho'oponopono is. It's within our families, in schools and intergenerational programs, right? And so I see this really as an enduring and dynamic movement. And while I think there's a lot of attention paid to the telescopes themselves, me, from a cultural identity standpoint, I also want to bring forth the amount of courage and kapu aloha that it's taking for Kia'i to continue to protect hundreds of sacred sites that have been documented within this area, including more than several dozen ahu, over 34 documented burials, some containing multiple Ivi and ancestral remains. These cultural sites and deposits, this is our traditional and customary practices that are inextricably tied to the aina. And if we think about strengthening our discussions of what is pono with one another, we have to adhere to stewardship and management that is pono with the aina itself. And that's what Kapu Aloha is bringing back into the forefront. And, you know, in full disclosure, for me, I've not been able to go up to the Mauna yet in a personal or professional capacity during the most recent wave of protection by Kia'i. And I think it's really critical to talk to the Kia'i that are at the Pu'uhonua, that are creating programming day and night, and they are actively revitalizing what does it look like to bring healing back to keiki, to kupuna, to kane, wahine, mahu. What does it look like to manage this amount of resources in a way that is foundational to culture and is a part of what we want well-being to look like for our people in the future? And so I just wanted to bring that back into the conversation as well, because I think that's really really critical for the three of us on the call today as being Native Hawaiians.
And, I should say that there's also courage on the part of many in the community who are standing up to say, I disagree with what's going on the mountain. We have an excerpt from a respected navigator, Chad Kalepa-Bayan, who testified before the Hawaii County Council in support of TMT, criticizing a proposal for a 60-day construction moratorium on the 30-meter telescope.
Law and order is not in control of the mountain. I respect the right of protesters to protest peacefully, but not to break the law by denying legal access to the summit. TMT has endured a long and tenuous legal process, and the Supreme Court ruled favorably to uphold the BLNR's right to grant a conservation district use permit. In an adversarial court process, both sides present evidence to make their case. One side is successful in arguing the case, and one side is the loser. To now disagree with the verdict by actions blockading TMT construction crews' access to the mountain is the behavior of an immature adolescent, and it unfairly punishes the project.
And that was Chad Babayan. A lot of emotion in his voice, and there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in this. You know, you hear it in the conversations at the gas station, in the grocery store, when people come over to your house. If you're in church, there is a nod to what's going on, a acknowledgement of what is going on the mountain, because it does affect our community. We have a number of people who called in, many shy. There are some folks who were questioning, why we are here at this point. We do have a call on the line right now. Rick from Windward Oahu, you have a question for us?
Yeah, my point of view is that whether the TMP loses or wins, it's not going to change the basic social conditions of Native Hawaiians. And it may be, if they stop TMT, it might be a you know, a victory, a symbolic victory, but it's not going to change the conditions. The Hawaiians need places to live. We need affordable housing. That's the main issue. But we keep on being pushed around by the construction industry for the last 60 years. You know, jobs in progress. The jobs are only temporary, you know. And I'm not against science. I love science. I love astronomy. So if we find out the origins of the universe, then what? We have to still deal with the social conditions here on the ground.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you. We feel your pain. You don't have to be a Native Hawaiian to hear what's going on in your voice as you try and as joining this conversation. We have another call, Bernadette from Honolulu. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've been listening to this for quite a while, and my heart's breaking on all sides, because I know the Hawaiian people are navigation oriented people. I mean, they look to the stars for so much, and they have a deep, deep spiritual inner space, and as I do too. I'm five generations here in Hawaii, and my roots go back to some of the beginning members of the Liliuokalani Trust and the bringing about of Ho'oponopono, and my uncle's is a living treasure. I am just feeling that it's so painful, and I understand why, as a culture, we're here, that we need to be here. We need to be present. We need to be vocal. We need to be energized. We need to be consolidated. But unfortunately, what has happened is we're taking a stance that is creating our power, but it's also separating ourselves from probably a greater power. And I'm just wondering, can we make this a spiritual endeavor? Can we make this a thing of power to, as a people who looks to the stars, can we embrace, support, become TMT and become that movement and be a very vibrant and protective part of that whole movement, rather than trying to stop? Just embrace and empower and take it. Make it our own.
John Osorio, what do you think?
I really actually want to respond to like all three of those, and I want to point out that none of us on this conversation today, none of the three of us have been talking about the law and how important it is to follow the law. And I think that's probably because, as Hawaiians, we understand kind of a pernicious late nature of law in Hawaii and how it has been ignored in the past when it was convenient to people who were powerful and who simply wanted to have control of our land, Pearl Harbor, Hickam, Schofield, Waikiki. We kind of understand that this is not an argument that belongs here. And what I really appreciated about both John and Kealoha's approach is that we're really trying to understand philosophically where Hawaiians are at this particular moment in time, with a number of different kinds of threats, physical, climatological, global, political threats, you know, where we are and how we manage to keep the best parts of our culture alive. And, you know, I don't think we disagree over that. And if John thinks that, you know, investing in this science will bring a better perspective to us, all I can say is that may be true, but not at this time. You know, when I was a teenager, I didn't know who Papa and Vakea were. I could not speak my own language, and could barely understand, you know, a few score words. Over time, my generation and the generations behind us have become fluent, have become more knowledgeable. And as we've done that, our perspective of things has changed. And maybe there's going to come a time when we're going to participate just as avidly as any astronomer today in the searching of that distant, of those distant quadrants of the universe for answers here. But I think that right now, what we're looking at is, you know, our past. And we're trying to do this because of the 100 years in which, you know, so much of that knowledge was essentially swept aside by American education and assimilation. And this is a time of recovery. I do think that there'll be a time when that echa has been set aside, will be set aside, because we're confident, because we've learned, because we know what we're doing. I think we're learning to do that now.
You know, John, I was there, I think, with you at Iolani Palace when they had the transfer of Kaho'olawe from the military to the state. And, you know, Emina Lili was there, and you got up in the bandstand and you sang your Hawaiian soul song. And I looked down at the first row, which was filled with Hawaii governors, and they were wiping tears away. I mean, I would be lying if I said I didn't feel the emotion and the power of that day and that moment and what had just happened. And, you know, so I think a lot of people grapple with this. You know, there's the left brain and the right brain. I think they feel what's happening on the mountain, and they see what's happened in the past. It's an emotional time. Kaho'olawe, Mauna Kea. Anyone want to add anything at this point? I know we've had lots of questions. There was a question, one for Dean about John Osorio, about what part of the law spells out the use of ceded lands. Why hasn't the input of Native Hawaiians been factored in on all this? I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
It could take a long time. To
okay, that'll be another
but
show.
Basically, we had a ceded lands lawsuit back in 2010. You know, Judge McKenna found against our lawsuit, and then it was overturned by the state Supreme Court. And when it was overturned by the state Supreme Court, what entered into this is this acknowledgement that there is an un-yet really to-be-determined issue of whether the ceded lands belong to Kanaka Maoli, to what extent they do. And this was then remanded back by the U.S. Supreme Court when it was challenged, and we've left that question really unresolved. But it really comes down to this. That's the crown and government lands of the Kingdom of Hawaii, unlawfully seized, unlawfully transferred. When we go to a place like this, Hawaiians do not believe that they are, you know, in violation of the law.
Okay. You know, we've only got about 2 minutes left. Ke aloha, any final thoughts? And then John, we'll go to you, John DeVries.
I really appreciate what you had said, is that these are emotional conversations. And when I think back to cultural ike, for me, that emotional stirring, that's your na'au talking to you. That is you tapping into the Maoli that's within you. And I think it's really important for individuals and families and cultural groups and halau to really honor and respect the stirring of those feelings, and to really, you know, safely and, you know, protect one another and protect the ways in which those are being manifested within you.
John DeVries, final thoughts?
You know, what we've had today is something I appreciate, which is you have three Native Hawaiians with different viewpoints. May characteristic. I would also send a message to the TMT board that you need to find your resolve not in your own stuff, but in what is happening on the Mauna, and determine that your connection with the Mauna is as such that you are committed to being here. Our ancestors took your field of astronomy as a sacred science.
Okay, and John Osorio, we've got about 30 seconds left.
I really enjoyed this conversation. I enjoyed talking with John and with Ke Aloha, and thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, John.
Mahalo
and
nui.
Ke Aloha.
All right. Well, we would like to thank our guests, Ke Aloha Fox, Native Hawaiian Cultural Liaison at Aloha Care, John Osorio, Dean of the School of Hawaiian Knowledge, and John DeFries, President of Native Sun Business Group. And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on the air, you can still contact the talkback line and leave your comments. Call 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation. Hawaii Talks.